This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's once again a unique privilege for me to be able to introduce my parents, particularly my father, to you for the annual series of shiurim that he gives here in the Beis HaMedrash. And I'm trying to negotiate with him that this will be the beginning of a series of at least three shiurim over the next two or three weeks. Although it's not necessary for me to introduce them to you, the purpose of an introduction is not... the purpose of an introduction is not only to tell an audience who the speaker is, but to tell an audience who the speaker is. And of course that can't be done in a few minutes, nor can, is there any way that justice can be done to that. Except just to say that I've mentioned to you often what Reb Chaim Shmulevitz used to say, that the mitzvah of being mechabed a parent is not merely a matter of showing a parent honor and respect, but actually discovering within a parent that which is worthy of that honor and respect, that which is unique, that which is special, that which makes one feel that need to show a genuine honor and respect. And Baruch Hashem, in my case, that's not a difficult thing to do. But what I do find is that as I get older and find myself coming into situations which, in retrospect, I saw them go through, the ease with which one can honor a parent becomes magnified progressively and geometrically progressively as one goes along. In my mother's case, the tightrope that she walked between being supportive to a man who was in high profile public office and at the same time being a personal Ezer Kenegdo and at the same time being a mother to children without sacrificing somehow and compromising on any of those fronts is something which I don't quite know to this day how she did. And that's something that Serena and I often talk about. In my father's case, the concept that we spoke about in the ladies' shiur this morning, the unique ability to interact with the secular world without integrating with it. We were raised as children at a time when none of our contemporaries wore yarmulkes at school, not the frum, not the non-frum, it was unheard of. I think my brother was the first child to wear a yarmulke at school. We were raised in a time when no women wore shaitels except my mother, and later on a few other ladies. It's difficult to picture what Johannesburg looked like at that time. And so obviously the interaction that we had, there were no frum schools. There was King David School, certainly at the primary level, was all that was available. The choice was that or a Jew or a non-Jewish school. And so we were raised having to interact with the secular world, and yet very strangely, and again, I don't know how it was done in retrospect, we were comfortable interacting, but we never felt integrated. Our integration was with the Torah world. We felt more comfortable when as children we used to go to Israel and find ourselves in the yeshiva world. That's where we felt comfortable. In Johannesburg we found ourselves able to interact comfortably, but we found no need or desire or comfort in integration. And that too was something very special, and something which one finds lacking in the world today. The inability to distinguish between interaction and integration. The need to live entirely in one area or in the other, where one finds frum people not being able to interact without integrating, either having to sacrifice the integration or the interaction. That's something that they achieved and something that has stood all of us in good stead since then. And I think something which to a large extent in this Beis HaMedrash has become part of the operation of the Beis HaMedrash, something that we've emphasized, that there has to be an ability to interact normally and successfully with the secular world, with the Jewish and non-Jewish world, with the wider community, and at the same time the integration has to be something which takes place in a Torah environment and not in a non-Torah environment. So a great deal of the Hakol Satov that this community needs to feel goes in fact to my parents, and it's with great pleasure and honor that I introduce to you my father.
Friend and colleague in Rabbi Aloy, whom I'm so very pleased to see this evening, and so very pleased to see at all times and at any time. ladies and gentlemen, I must begin in paying my respects to my host this evening, and that is your Rav. And he has spoken to you about the Pesach Kabed Es Avicho. And I will give the counterpart to that Pesach, Bein Yechabed Ev Ve'Eved Adenov. A son honors his father. And this is something that my wife and I have experienced with great pleasure during this visit and during our preceding visits to Johannesburg. Bein Yechabed Ev. A son honors his father. Ve'eved Adenov, and a slave his master. And it is the Targum who gives us the interpretation to this and says, Ho albro amir leyakre abo, ve'avdo lemidchal min kodom rabenei. It is the son about whom it is said that it is necessary for him to honor his father. But in the case of a servant or a slave to his master, it is not honor, but it is fear. And the difference is very simple. The son honors his father and gives to his father. And the slave is afraid of what his master can do to him. And I want to be a little more specific, because into this you also, ladies and gentlemen, enter. What is it that our son, with what is it that our son has honored us? He has honored us with being a Ben Torah, and he has honored us with creating Torah personalities. And this is where you come in. The Gemara speaks about man as being Shutfei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Maaseh Bereishis. It is possible for a Jew to be, so to say, a partner with the Ribbono Shel Olam in the very act of creation. The very act of creation is to create a personality that is, in every respect of the word, a Torah personality. His whole hashkofa is a Torah hashkofa. His whole life is a Torah life. And that is what I have discovered amongst the men and women of this Beis HaMidrash. I have seen it developing over the years, but never to the extent that I found it in the Beis HaMidrash during this last month. My prayer is that you go, may chayil el choyil, may you go from strength to strength. My wife and I are grateful to our son, and my wife and I recognize that pleasure which you give him, and you also give us. There is only one statement I wish to make, and it is rather personal. And I'm afraid I'm going to do something that is rather distasteful to me this evening, and that is I'm going to speak about matters that may be a little bit personal, and I may speak to you about some of my recollections. But I hope you will understand and appreciate it, that I'm doing it for one reason only, and that is that I might be able to communicate to you some of those deep concepts that have come to me through my teachers during the course of my lifetime. When we were in Johannesburg, you will have gained from my son that we visited Eretz Yisrael frequently. And when we went to Eretz Yisrael, we took our children with us. And there were times when we left them there in a yeshiva for several months. And my wife and I always went to the Kosel to pray. There was only one prayer that was in my heart and on my lips. I never asked my wife what she prayed for, but I knew that it was exactly the same. And what we prayed for is that our children should be B'nai Torah, that they should be osek in the Torah, that they should be occupied with Torah, and that their lives should be devoted to Torah. That was the only prayer. And how thankful we are to the Almighty that that prayer has been answered. And once again, it is not only my son and his wife whom I thank, because his wife, without his wife, he would have been unable to achieve all this. But it is also to you, ladies and gentlemen, that we are grateful for great pleasure, for that great pleasure that you have been affording us and are affording us. And now, the subject of my address to you this evening has been entitled, Whither Torah Jewry. For a subject such as that, I have got to explain to you various aspects of Torah as I see it. Now, in the Torah world, there have always been various personalities in a community. And each one of these was a Torah personality. And if it was a question of a group, it was a group that comprised Torah personalities. Let us go back to a city such as Sephas. It was a great city in the 16th century. It was a city where the Rov was the Arizal, where the Dayan was the Beis Yosef, where the Darshan was the Al-Sheikh, where the Bar-Kubel was Reb Moshe Cordoviro, where the Shamish was the Sefer Charedim, and where the Chazan was Reb Shlomo Al-Kadetz, famous for his composition, the Lechor Dodi. That is what constituted the community. That is what comprised the community. And that has been the pattern of a Torah community throughout the generations. I was privileged to be in Eastern Europe during that period between the two world wars. And I still saw remnants of that type of community. Where there was a Rov, and where there was a Rosh Yeshiva, and where there was a Dayan. Where there was the Baal Musar, and where there was the Dayan, and where there was the Darshan. One saw a Shamish of exceptional stature. But one also saw the Balei Batim. And without the Balei Bos, the Rov could not function. And so the Rov had the Balei Bos. And the Rov and the Dayan and the Yeshiva and Baal Musar had his Balei Batim. But then there was the Hamein Om. There was the people, the multitude. And they were Bnei Torah. It made no difference whether they were businessmen or whether they were tradesmen. They would come into the Bais Medrash in the morning. They would be in the Bais Medrash in the night. But something would be learned. The meanest of them was, by today's standards, a Lamdan. That was the Hamein Om, that was the people, and that was the community. And when I speak about Whither Torah Jewry, it is to that that we must aspire, to once again have communities such as that. But I would like you to realize, ladies and gentlemen, what the period between the two world wars meant. In every village, in every hamlet, there was an Odom Godol. One knew that the Rav was a great man. And whenever we went to some village to visit it, as Bnei Yeshiva, we called upon the Rav of the town first. And we always learned something from him. We always learnt much from him. And if you try and imagine what it meant, and if we can only know what it meant when we realize what it is we lost, what the Torah communities were of Eastern Europe, and when one goes the south of Latvia, the whole of Lithuania, through to Poland, southern Poland, Galicia, Czechoslovakia, Hungary and the eastern part of Romania. What a sweep it was! And by then we had lost the Jews, the Jewish communities of Russia. But even between that period of the two world wars, what a sweep it was! That was Torah Jewry. That was the Mokama Torah. That was the haven of Torah. That is where the Torah found its resting place for so many hundreds of years. And it is that which was destroyed. And so we are living in a period where we have seen the destruction, but simultaneously we are witnessing the restoration. You know, and I've touched on this before, there is an era of revisionism that has entered into the life of the world, not only to the Jewish world, and that is to denigrate the past, and to say that we are as great as were those who preceded us. Nay, we are much greater. And the historians are rewriting history. And if there is crime today, they say there was always crime. And it is not true. Because I am in the privileged position that I can speak about the past. And when I was studying in Yeshiva Eitz Chaim under my uncle, we would walk about in the streets of London any time at night and during the early hours of the morning. And that cannot be done today. And a woman walked freely in the streets of London, in the suburbs. And when we are in London today, once it is dark, I do not allow my wife to go out and to cross the street in one of the suburbs of London. It has all changed. There is crime. There is no respect for property. There is no respect for persons. And the historians are doing all they can to change all that and to tell us that it was always like that. There was always immorality, but it was hidden. There was always unhappiness between husband and wife, but it wasn't made public, and that is not true. There is no comparison. What is happening today with that which was? They have gone so far as to say that the Holocaust did not take place. And professors are teaching their students that it didn't take place. And professors are writing books saying that it didn't take place. And if it did take place, it was a minor event. A couple of thousand people. What does it all mean? That is the world in which we are living. And so we have seen the destruction. And now we are witnessing the restoration. But I'm afraid to say that even those of us who are witnessing this restoration don't quite understand the past. Because if we want to know where we are and whither we are going, it is necessary for us to know whence we have come. We have come from a Torah world. And what a great world it was. You know, there is that famous passage in the book of Ezra that describes what took place when the Bais Sheni was dedicated. And it says there, the Rabbi Me'akonim, the Halavidim, the Roshayo, the Sazakonim, Asher Ha'uyos Abayis Orishon, Be'yostem Zeh Abayis Be'inehem, Be'uchim Be'kel Godel. And many of the Kohanim, the Levim, and the heads of the people, the elders, who saw the first Beis HaMikdash with their eyes, when they now saw the founding of the second Beis HaMikdash, they wept with a heavy weeping. No comparison to the first Beis HaMikdash. And yet there were those who did not see the first Beis HaMikdash. And they, the Rabbim, the true of the Simcha Lehorim Tov, they raised their voices in joy at what they saw. And they thought that the second base of Migdash was greater than the first. And I've heard it said in America and in Israel that those who study the Torah are more in number than those who studied before. And the learning is greater than it was before, but that is all wrong. I described that sweep to you from South Lithuania right into the eastern parts of Romania. There was no place where there wasn't an organ girdle in the town. And where people went and they learnt in the Bais Medrash, in the morning and in the evening. We haven't got that Havein Om anymore. And in the yeshivas itself, we haven't got that depth of learning. We haven't got those characters. We haven't got the midos that was in the yeshiva once upon a time. It is a different world, and it is necessary for us to know whence we came. Some years ago, I met a young Rosh Yeshiva in Israel. And he has been successful in establishing the yeshiva. And he wanted to know about Telge as it was. And I said, you have told me of some of your difficulties with your students, with your Talmidim. I want you to know that during the 6 years that I was in Telge, not once was there a case of theft that we knew about. Not once was there anything ever missing in the yeshivas. Not once was there anything missing from a stancia. Never. One dealt in the winter with 320 young men and in the summer with 300 young men. We mixed with the girls also. The girls of the Frum family, the girls of Jan Holler, we knew them. Not once was there a case of elbow. Not once was any young man accused of doing something improper, which was sexually immoral. It didn't ever happen. Can't say that today. We must know whence we came, and it wasn't so long ago. That is the terrible world that was. That was the destruction, and now we are witnessing the restoration. And we are rebuilding a Torah world. Tov Shinun has been a very great year. Great events have taken place. But there is a reason behind it all. The collapse of communism and the freeing of Jews behind the Iron Curtain. This was something that could not be envisaged a year ago. It happened overnight. My uncle, Zichrono Livracha, always used to teach us that when there is something Shaloka Derech HaTeva, it is to instill a ruler into us. It is through that we can have faith. And he would describe what took place during the years of the Holocaust. It was Shaloka Derech HaTeva that the Holocaust should have begun in Berlin. It was the last place one would think that such a thing could happen. It's true that the Meshech HaChochma predicted it. Predicted it 50 years before it took place. But the way in which it took place. And my uncle described once how the Germans were running away from Stalingrad and they had an opportunity to save themselves. But they would first of all kill the remaining Jews. Spend time on that. And lose time to escape and save their own lives. That is Shaloka Derech HaTeva. And we must know that there was a reason for it all. Whatever the reason might be, it is not my purpose to dwell on that subject this evening. But what I would like to point out to you that the events of this year have been events that are Shalot Derech HaTeva. It is something that one couldn't understand, one cannot understand. It was entirely unpredictable. The Chofetz Chaim said exactly 70 years ago, he said it in 1920, that communism would last for exactly 70 years, he said, and it would collapse and there would be no war. I did not hear him say that, but it used to be repeated in yeshiva when I studied there. And a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I spent a day in Torah Yeshiva in Wycliffe, Ohio, and we spent it with Reb Motel Gifter and with his Rebbetzin Shoshano. And there he mentioned it to me again, how the Chofetz Chaim said 70 years ago that communism would last for only 70 years and it would collapse and there would be no warfare. But I did hear Reb Daniel say something else. I heard Reb Daniel saying that the greatest hate, the hate shel Rabin of our generation was the neglect and the yayush and the complete abandonment of Russian Jewry. And he said that this is something that had never occurred before in Jewish life. Before the First World War, when there were pogroms in Russia, Jews in England rose up and protested. Jews in America rose up and protested. And there were 3 million Jews in Russia who were abandoned. There were no protests about the way that they were being treated. And Reb Daniel said that God will find his own way in bringing those Jews back to the Torah. I listened to him then. I had no idea of how it would ever take place. And I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam that I have been blessed to witness the realization of those prophetic words of Reb Daniel. The saving of Jewry. It has been a source of emun as far as I am concerned. And I would like to convey something of that feeling to you, ladies and gentlemen. So much has happened during our time. There has been the survival and the revival of the Torah. I remember when I was sitting in my study in Johannesburg and the news came through that Eastern European Jewry no longer existed. Gone were the yeshivas, gone were the Bote Midrash, gone were the libraries, gone were the printing presses. And I had only a few forim in my library. And I thought to myself that I will never be able to build up a library of Sephorim. And within 10 years, there wasn't a Sefer that wasn't again available. The photostatic process had been introduced. As far as I'm concerned, the photostatic process was discovered and it was introduced for one reason only. And that is, it was Hashgochas Hashem Yisborach, to make available those works to us. On every page of the Talmud, the Sefer HaMitzvot is quoted. I have never seen a Sefer HaMitzvot, it was too expensive to acquire. Even the Eitzes Sforim, the library in Yeshiva, didn't have a Sefer HaMitzvot. It had long been out of print. And within 10 years after all this destruction, I had a Sefer HaMitzvot which I acquired for a few dollars. It was a pittance. And there wasn't a Sefer that wasn't available. And so we saw the survival of the Torah and its revival. And it is about that I shall have a word or two to say later on. Of course it was a different world. There was a lishmo as far as the Torah was concerned. The poverty in which the Torah was studied, the bidukei aniyos that was there, tells we were comparatively speaking well off. In Poland it wasn't so good. The Talmidim of Rebbe Chonam Wasserman suffered hunger. And I pleaded with him, will you have to go to America to collect money not to go? And he said, I've got nothing to feed you with. And I said, rather hunger with Reb El Chonon than plenty without Reb El Chonon. That was the spirit of the yeshivas. My cousin Reb Leib Lopyan Zichroni Lebrocho, in the course of a discussion, once said to me, if all those difficulties that the Bnei Yeshiva experienced during those years between the two world wars were to be experienced today, would we have any Bnei Yeshiva? It's made so much easier. The conditions are so much better. And not only that, but there's so much more atzlocha in learning. The Siyata Bishmaya today is visible. We had to work very, very hard. There was the Amolisher Torah. And now the Amolisher Torah comes only after a Talmid had acquired for himself the pleasure of Torah. He got the spirit of the Torah. And then Rabbeinu Shalom says to him, now is the Amolisher Torah. Now comes the labor and the toil in the Torah. But he was off to a good start. I've seen all this with my eyes. And it has given me a tremendous amount of emunah. In this Torah world, it was altogether a life of Torah. You know, there is a passage in the Gemara that I would like to deal with for a moment or two. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, by Rav Ashi Uki Ashlesha Melochim, when Rav Ashi was giving his shiur in his yeshiva, he concluded the day's shiur with a passage in the Mishnah and in the Gemara that deals with the three kings that were not to have Olam Habo, Yerovam ben Nevot, Achav, and Menashe. And he said to his Talmidim, Lamochar Niftach Bechavrin, tomorrow we shall begin our discussion with regard to our Chavrim, with our friends. Who are they? Yerovam ben Nevot, Achav and Menashe. And then the Gemara tells us, also Menashe is Chazi Leibetz Kalmei. Menashe comes that night to Rav Ashi in a dream. And he's got a timer to him. He says, Chavros v'chavre da'avuch korislon. You call us three, your friends, and the friends of your father. Do you know what you are speaking about? Rav Ashi, Mahecha Bois Lemishri Amotzi, when you make Amotzi, what part of the morsel of bread do you eat first after you've made Amotzi? And Rav Ashi said, Leyodana, I don't know. He says, Omar Lemahecha Bois Lemishri Amotzi Leyodemiras, the Chavra of Korislon, you don't even know what part of the morsel to bite into after you've made a metzi, and you call us your friend? How can you do that? And Rav Ashi says to him, please tell me, and I will repeat it in the yeshiva tomorrow in your name. And he tells him from that part of the crust that is baked first. You don't take the soft part in the middle of the loaf, but you take the crust and you make your metzi on that. He didn't want to show up Rav Ashi's ignorance. But what he wanted to show him was something very deep. You know how when one begins studying the Shulchan Aruch, one has the laws of Ashkomas Babeter, and one learns there that when one puts on one's coat, one puts one's arm into the right sleeve first, and then into the left sleeve. That when one puts on one's shoes, one puts on the right shoe first, and then the left shoe. And when one ties one's laces, one ties the left lace first, and the right lace afterwards. And right from the beginning we are introduced to what is a very fact of Torah life, and that is that every movement of a Torah personality has got a reason and has got a meaning. It doesn't matter what we do. We don't do anything without it having a reason. We don't say anything without having a reason to say it. And Menashe says to Rav Ashi, you, what do you do? He didn't say what is the deen. He said, what do you do? Twice a day you make a mitzi. Have you ever thought where you bite into first such a simple thing? That was life between the two world wars. And I know it was only a reflection of what life was between the before the First World War. Because there is Yeridas Adoras. Every generation is less than the previous generation. I'm able to speak to you of what I have seen. And I'm able to tell you what my teachers told me about their teachers. And what they told me, their teachers told them about their teachers. When my uncle spoke about Reb Simcha Zissel, and he used to say what Reb Simcha Zissel used to tell them about Reb Yisroel Salanter, and my uncle still saw Reb Yisroel Salanter. He's a boy of 7 or 8 years old. And I asked my uncle, what impressed you about Reb Yisroel Salanter? And he said, what impressed me was his bearing, how he carried himself. What impressed me was his dress. He said he was dressed like a sochayer. And I was so respectful of my uncle, and I always stood in awe before him and when I was with him, that I didn't have the courage at that time to say, what do you mean that he was dressed like a sochayer? But that is what he said. He said, so clean. That is what impressed him about Reb Yisroel Salanter. And he told me what Reb Simcha Zissel used to say about Reb Yisroel Salanter. And then, what Reb Simcha Zissel used to tell his Talmidim, what Reb Yisroel Salanter used to say about Reb Zindel Salanter. And then you go back to Reb Chaim Voloshiner, you go back to the Vilna Gaon. That was a life of Torah. There has been something very remarkable in what has taken place in this era, which I shall call the era of restoration. I'm speaking about an era that we are able to define exactly when it began. It began in 1941. You know that famous verse in Kehelis, the Zerach HaShemesh Uvo HaShemesh, and the sun rises and the sun sets. And the Midrash says, "V'chi ein oni yodim shezorach haShemesh uBo haShemesh," something that takes place every day. Do we not know it? But when the Talmid Chochem sees something that is nature, he knows that in that nature he sees Ashgochas Hashem, not only with regard to that particular event that is taking place, but that he sees an equivalent as Baruch Hashem in all areas of life. And the Midrash says, Ad shelo yishka shimsho shel tzadik ve, mazriya shimsho shel tzadik acher. The star of one tzadik is not altogether set, and the star of another tzadik has already risen. I have spoken to you about the miracles of the post-World War II era. How much emunah it gives us. In all this destruction that took place, Hashem left over great ones in every field. And these were able to sow the seed and to bring about the revival of Torah. Just to mention a few. And I am only mentioning my particular school. There were those that were saved from other schools and made equally great contributions. The contribution that was made by Rabbi Aaron Kotler. The contribution that was made by Rabbi Eliyahu Meir. And by Reb Mordechai Katz, and that started in 1941, when Reb Aaron Kotler, having fled from Kletsk into Russia, and from Russia into China, and from China into Japan, and from Japan he made his way to the west coast of America, and he landed in California in 1941. And in 1941 he started the yeshiva in Lakewood. And in 1941, Rebbe Eliyahu Meir and Rebbe Mordechai Katz started the yeshiva in Cleveland. And it was a yeshiva that had not yet existed in America. It was built on Torah Lishmo. Until then, when a young man went to yeshiva, they had to promise him the world. He could become a rabbi. Could earn a very good salary afterwards. They would help him through university to get a degree also. And Reb Aaron Kotler came and stopped all that. It was to be pure, unadulterated Torah. Something that was completely foreign to the United States of America. And he was the one who established it. And Reb Eliyahu Meir and Reb Mordechai Katz established it. Interaction, yes. But no integration into American life. As your Rav explained to you this morning in his shir, and briefly mentioned again this evening. The emunah that one has, if one realizes what it was that actually took place. I told you that, and I excuse myself for it, some of the things which I will be speaking about to you in this address this evening are some of my recollections of the past. There were very many things that were turning points in my life. Perhaps the greatest was the moment I came into my uncle's home in London. And he took me as his own son. And that is what I remained to him throughout his life. And my children were his grandchildren throughout his life. And my cousins were my brothers and I was their brother. And my children are their nephews and their niece. That was perhaps the greatest turning point in my life. It was the first time that I realized that I was in the presence of greatness and that I was to live with that greatness. There was another very interesting turning point in my life. And that is after I had been some years at the Telge Yeshiva, the Rav Reb Avrom Yitzchok Zecher Tzadik Kodesh Livrocho would have every Shabbos afternoon a group of young men to visit him and to spend an hour and a half with him. And there came a time when I was able to be one of those men. And we were able to... I discovered it very soon after, in the way the old Tells of Rav explained a certain midrash. And with your permission, I'll share with you the midrash and the explanation of it of the Tells of Rav this evening. The midrash tells the story of Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafto, Shebo Erev Shabbos Belehoyo Leiman Lehisparnes. It's Friday, hasn't got enough for Shabbos. He needs a little fish, he needs a little wine, he needs a little meat for Shabbos. Hasn't got it. Can you imagine the pain he experiences? He's got to go home to his wife, and she's waiting. And she's waiting for the fish to prepare it, and the meat to prepare it, and the wine to set it on the table. And he hasn't got anything. And the Midrash says, Yotzele mino irvi yispale lifnei olekim. He goes out of the city and he prays to Hashem. The mitan lo even tovo min Hashemayim. This precious stone comes down to him from heaven. He takes it to the Shulchani and exchanges it for money. Ufarnis Usha Shabbos, and now he's got enough for this Shabbos. Omre Ishto Mehechon Eilu, he comes home and he gives this to his wife. The quantity is greater than he's brought back any other Friday. The quality is better than he's brought back any previous Friday. She says to him, from where did this all come? She knows he hasn't got the material means for so much and of such good quality. Omar lo mi mishe parnes HaKodesh Baruch Hu. This comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. She was a very clever woman. Omro im einato omeri me'echon ein eini te'em es klum. She said to me, don't tell me any stories. I don't believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave you this food to bring home. I want you to tell me the truth, and if you don't tell me the truth, I will not taste anything of this. Omro lo, Omar lo, Lomo. He said, but why? What does it matter to you? Omro lo ato rotze sheyei shulchonecho choseir v'shulchon chaveiro chomole. She said to him, on the Olam HaEmes, do you want that your table will be wanting? And you look across at your friend's table and your colleague's table, and there it will be full. In other words, you are taking your schar for what you have done, your reward. You are taking it here upon this earth. And that is exactly what we don't want. We want to be paid and paid on the Olam HaEmes. What have you done? And the Tirjah Rav asks, what is the one got to do with the other? What has it got to do with the other? That he's given a precious stone. Is that his reward on the Olam HaEmes? The reward on the Olam HaEmes is abstract. It's not concrete. And this is something that is concrete. And how can one be paid here on earth for all that Torah? And then there was that great chiddush of his, which is really not a chiddush, it is Torah. And it is explained so clearly in the Derech Hashem. And what he said was that everything has its source in the Olam HaEyonim. And what we see here upon earth is something that has come through from the Olam HaAtzilus, through the Olam Brio, through the Olam HaYetziro, and down to the Olam HaAsiyo. And in between those four worlds, there are thousands of worlds. And it is in itself something that is purely conceptual and spiritual and abstract. But when it comes down to earth, it is in this particular form. And when the Rambam and the Rambam speak about Gehenna, and the one says that it is fire, and the other one says that the fire is only metaphorical, there is really no machloka, says the old Talmud Rav, because what is fire down here upon earth can be distress and anguish in its very source. And it's one and the same thing. And it doesn't matter what it is, it can be a stone. But at its source, it is spiritual. There it has feeling and even intelligence. And you know the Rambam at the beginning of Yesodei HaTorah, where he speaks about human beings, and then he speaks about the degrees of the Malachim. And the last of the degrees is the Ishim, because that is nearest to man. And then he speaks about the Shemesh and the Yoreach, the sun and the moon. And he says that they've got intelligence. And I gave a shiur of this in California, and there was present an astrophysicist. And he couldn't thank me enough for explaining it. And what I said was, when the Rambam speaks about the sun and moon having intelligence, he's speaking about the sun and the moon in its very source. There is intelligence. And there is feeling. Koach, Zvuru, Nufran Behem, Lios Moshlim Bekerev Teveo. And so when Moshe doesn't curse the water, he has a relationship with the water as its source, with the dust of the earth as its source. And it is something real, it's not imaginary, it's not an illusion. And when we speak about where we are going with regard to Torah, if we could only make the attempt and endeavor to get through to the Amito Shel Torah, I don't believe we can accomplish this in its entirety, but we can to some extent. It may be something that is very little, but it is there. And always there is something new to find in the Torah, and we are able to create. Mokomei nihurona veseinu leiz gadelbo, oleiz gadelbo. The Eridus Adoros, how is it there's still something left for us? The answer is a very simple one. One is dealing with Ruchnius. And Ruchnius is something that is infinite. And the smallest measure of infinity is infinity itself. That is Torah. And that is what we are able to do with it. There is so much more that I would like to speak to you about, but I don't want to tax your patience, nor do I want to tax your indulgence. But there is just one other thing I would like to say to you. My wife and I have much distress when we see and try and experience together with those who suffer the loneliness that there is in the world. We cannot understand that there are so many young men and women, and it is so difficult to make shidduchim and to find shidduchim. I think that the relationship between the sexes is something that has to be considered very carefully in the world, when we want to know where the Torah world is going. There are far too many divorces in the Torah world. And I'm afraid that one of the reasons is that those who come out of the yeshivas today don't know how to treat a woman. You see, in that period between the two world wars, it was quite different. There weren't any dormitories in the yeshiva. We stayed in a stancia. We were two young men and we had a room with a family. And we saw family life. And we were dealing with the Hamon Am, with a multitude. But it was a Torah multitude. And we saw how a husband treated his wife. I remember being in Switzerland, in Basel, in the home of Moritz Rakowski. And that is where the first months of the war caught me. And he wouldn't allow me to go to England until we saw what way the war was moving. And it was Liechtenstein. And the Swiss, if they haven't got any work, will find something to do. At 7 o'clock in the morning, the supermarkets are already busy, the post office is open. And so Slithers was 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was waiting for Moritz Rakowski. And he came out of the bedroom, tearing his shoes. Not to put them on in the bedroom, it might disturb his wife. Lived through that, saw that, it was an example. Today they put a boy into a dormitory, it's a kazarma. You know what a kazarma is? It's a barracks. He doesn't see any home life. Doesn't know how to treat a woman. But they keep you for a few more moments. Now I'll tell you a story that happened to my wife and myself also in Switzerland. We were there a few years ago. We were entertained in the home of Schmerling, who studied with me in the yeshiva in Telge. And it was lunchtime. His children were already out of the house. And there was his wife and there was my wife and there was Mr. Schmerling and myself. And there was his mother. A matriarch of a woman. Beautiful. Dignified. And she took part in the discussion. And then we benched. And when we were about ready to go, she said, "I want to tell you something. Many years ago, my late husband was the gubber of the shul. And your uncle was having lunch with us on a Shabbos. It was a winter Shabbos. And when we had finished lunch, my husband said to your uncle, 'You are speaking in shul this afternoon. We'll be late for Mincha. We must go.' And my uncle got up, went into the lobby, put on his coat, put on his hat. And Mrs. Schmerling came to the door to see them off. And he turned to her and he said to her, 'Aren't you coming to listen to the drosha?' And she said, 'Yes, but I must first take off from the table. And I've just got to make myself ready also. I'll come along later.' And my uncle said, and I can hear him saying it and I can see him doing it, 'Eva zeivel mir warten. If that is the case, we will wait.' And he took off his hat and he took off his coat and he sat down. And he waited until she was ready. And then she told us, 'I, and then my husband, and then your uncle walked together to shul.' That is Kovod HaBrios. And we say called Tavuda Bas Melech Pnimo. The covet of a woman is deep down inside her. She needs that covet. And she's given it. Today, I don't know what they would have thought of my uncle. Walking in the street together with a woman, even if there's another man in between. The woman walks behind. And the husband walks in front. And the reason it's taken from Monoach. Monoach walked behind his wife and he was called a Namor Oretz. And I saw a tshuva in the library of your Rav, in which Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach asks the question, what is the position today to let a woman go first? And the answer is given to him, and then he gives an answer to the answer. The answer is, that is a bit different, but he adds something, and I have a suspicion that the one to whom he asked was afraid to give the answer. And Reb Shlomo Zalman said, it's the news today. What is the Derech Eretz today? You let a woman go first. You give her that covered. Reb Shlomo Zalman says that. It's a different world. Now I'm afraid that yeshiva students haven't learned that there is such a thing as a covered to a woman. Ladies and gentlemen, what an opportunity we have in this world today. What an opportunity we have to become Baalei Emunah by seeing so much of Ishalot Derech HaTeva. What opportunities we have got to be Mekadesh Hashem. That the Goyim say today that this is something that was entirely unpredictable. Nobody could have foreseen it. We have got the opportunity of being Mekadesh Hashem. Being Mekadesh Hashem by being Torah personalities. By living a life of Torah. It doesn't matter if we are Rabbonim. Doesn't matter if we are Baalei Batim. It doesn't matter whether we are Hamonei Om. We are given that opportunity of being Mekadesh Hashem. Habitu. Erzur chutzaftem. Look to the rock whence you were hewn. The emakev is born ukartem, and to the cistern whence you were taken. Abitu l'Avron avichum el foretechul elchem. Look to Avron avinu your father and to Sarah who gave birth to you. Ki echod krasiv. When I made him into whom he was but one. And I did bless him and I did multiply him. In 1941 this new era of Torah started. Torah Lishmo. It is to be found in the United States. It is to be found in Eretz Israel. It is to be found here in Johannesburg in our very midst. Small beginnings. And what can become from small beginnings? It all goes back to one man, to Avraham Avinu. And Hashem blessed him and Hashem multiplied him. And so may it be with you, ladies and gentlemen. May Hashem bless you and may Hashem multiply you. And may you be a source of great happiness and fulfillment to yourselves. And may you be the Kadshe Hashem Barabim. Thank you, Moreh De'Asra. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.